Will there be any serious thinkers there, or will they all be simple?
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 521 for the week of July 29th, 2024. I am some guy, David T. Cole, and I'm here with underpopulated banquet, Sarah D. Bunting.
More wine?
Legitimate Viscontessa, Tara Ariano.
Totally legitimate. Do not look into it.
And repentant whale hostage, Catherine Van Arendon.
Help, help. I'm being repressed.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, she is a writer and a critic at Vulture. You've heard her with us many times before. It's Catherine Van Arendon.
Catherine, welcome back.
Catherine.
Wow, thanks, guys. So happy to be here.
We're thrilled to have you back to talk about the Decameron, in which it's 1348 and Italy is being ravaged by the bubonic plague. While the cities are choked with corpses, those with the means to leave are leaving, like all our characters here, who've been invited to visit Visconti Leonardo out in the country at Villa Santa. Those guests include noble newlyweds Nafili and Panfilo, also Pompanea, Leonardo's betrothed, and her handmaiden Misia, Tindaro, the sickly heir to his uncle's enormous fortune, and Tindaro's doctor Dioneo, and Leonardo's cousin Filomena, who brings her handmaiden Lachisca. The trip is rough and not everyone makes it, but that's to be expected. Not everyone at the villa makes it either. Kathleen Jordan created the show by loosely adapting The Decameron by Boccaccio. She previously created Teenage Bounty Hunters. All 8 episodes of the first season dropped on Netflix Thursday. We may talk about events from any of them, so be warned. Let's do the Chen check-in. Catherine, should our listeners watch The Decameron?
Yes. Qualified yes, but yes.
Sarah?
Yeah, qualified yes for, I think, the same reasons as Catherine. We'll get into it.
Dave? Mm,
yes, I will say yes as well.
No. I'm a no on this one.
Get her! Get the heretic!
Let's get into it. Catherine, one of the observations that you made in your review, which we will link in the show notes, is that the Decameron, and I quote, feels stretched beyond its ability to sustain any momentum, which is something that I felt as well. Is the issue perhaps this is a movie and not a show?
Yes.
Okay.
So for a lot of these things, when it is clearly a movie and not a show, like, you can feel the original work. It's a novel length thing, or it was actually developed from a potential feature slick script and they weren't sure which one it was going to be. And eventually they lengthened it or they shortened it or whatever. The thing about the Decameron is that the original text is a fucking doorstop, right? Like, it is that, like, one of these behemoths. It existed before the novel was a form. It existed before the movie was a form. And so the ways that this thing is messy, I do think are, like, a really interesting attempt to retain a lot of what the flavor of this original medieval object was. Does that necessarily work all the time for my brain-broken 2024 eyeballs? No, it doesn't, because I have the attention span of a gnat, and I've been ruined by algorithms.
Sure.
In a lot of these cases, you're like, it's your fault. Like, you should have been smarter about the pacing of this thing. And in this case, there are times when I'm like, I don't think that pacing works. And there are times when I'm like, I think you did this on purpose. Like, even though I don't agree with it, I think it's a choice you were deliberately making, which honestly in itself is a relief.
Mm, okay. But you're a qualified guest. What are your qualifications?
The pacing is absolutely a part. Like, again, even though I think this is a choice that I understand from an intellectual perspective, I nevertheless, while watching it, was like, wow, we're just lurching from this thing to that thing. And I don't fully understand, like, there's, like, plot tension that you're trying to pull me through, but I've forgotten parts of it, and then we're going back to it. I also think, and again, this, like, reflects choices that feel like they're coming from this weird form that we don't do anymore, that it's trying to adapt, but it will swing wildly from one tone to another.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in moments, I felt like that was actually a surprisingly accurate representation of what it feels like to be a person in the world right now, where it's like everything's terrible. And like, if I think about it too much, I will stop. I will just weep and I will curl up into a ball. And at the same time, I'm eating ice cream, right? Like, and so like both of those things are happening the time simultaneously. And so sometimes those tonal shifts work like that, particularly with certain performances. And sometimes the tonal shifts are like, I cannot tell whether I'm supposed to be laughing at this or not. Yeah. I just really can't. Yeah.
So not being a liberal arts major, I've never read Decameron.
I've only read little bits. Yeah.
Yeah,
I did, however, listen on one of my many history podcasts that I listened to. They did a whole episode on the actual source material. And it sounds like the source material is basically like, this guy really liked stuff like Dante's Inferno. Mm-hmm. But this is a made to be entertaining satire of that sort of format. So like the original text isn't actually a story like this is being presented. It's some of the people we see in the show telling stories about other people, kind of like as much as you get a story about the first, second, third level of hell, you right. get stories about, oh, this person was a greedy person, this person was whatever, and these are all the naughty things that happened to them. And mm-hmm. that's sort of the book. And so like when I realized that, and then when we got into the series, I was like, well, how does this work? Is it just going to be them getting to the villa and then they're going to go around the campfire? So I guess they took those themes and they put it to the narrators to live all them out.
Right.
So mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't think this show is actually very close to the original
loose.
Text at right. all, because the format seems to be from the get-go. Mm-hmm. Totally different. That said, like there's enough stupidity going on in this show and enough dumb stuff and enough of them not taking too much seriously that I got into it for its own sake. But like, I wonder if the pacing where it seems like it starts and stops is sort of born out of a creative process that was all the cue cards on the floor that they wanted to hit the notes of the original text. And they were putting it together in a way that sort of engendered this herky-jerkiness that we get throughout the episodes.
Yeah. Well, it's also replicating it. Like, the original text is also herky-jerky. Like, because you're just going from one person being like, I want a sad story. And then someone else is like, I want a horny story. And so, like, the experience of reading that is that same thing, which is part of why I kept really going back and forth on the pacing. Because I was like, I don't think this works. Except I do think it's kind of a brilliant way of creating this bridge between what that original thing was and what a television show now has to be. Except I don't think it works. Except I do think it's so, like, I... Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Sarah, you suspected your reservations were going to be the same as Catherine's, are they?
Yeah, more or less. Like, it is a pacing issue, but then the fact that, like, the pacing issues may reflect the original and or are trying to perfect the original and failing. Like, one of the things that I liked about it was this, what I would call Bridgerton Dickinson energy, which was like, let's take the parts of this period that we're interested in, but then not be too faithful to Argo or how people might respond or casting people who look like period appropriate. Like, let's take what we want and leave the rest. But what they probably also should have left was any attempt to serialize this for a, quote, contemporary sensibility. And grading on the curve of, I understand how TV shows get pitched and that they didn't have certain choices. Like, I think the parts of this that worked best were, it's not even a Bridgerton energy. It's like a fucking Mel Brooks Airplane Zucker Abrams energy that it's like, just turn it loose, especially if you're like all of a sudden trying to be serious. Like, there are moments where like a character is like sobbing and I'm like, well, clearly this isn't supposed to be funny, but also how did we get here and how are we gonna leave?
Yeah.
And then it does, but at the same time, like Catherine is saying, I'm sort of torn because like I was watching one episode and like fell asleep during it, whatever. I had a long month, it was hot out. Woke up towards the end of the episode, picked right back up, and was like kind of fine with going in and out of this work, which I think is what the original was also trying to do, much like Canterbury Tales. That it's just like, take what you need, and if you're sleeping during part of it, who cares? Like, that's why it's a qualified yes. Like, is this as good as it could be? Probably not. But it's, I mean, there's nothing else like it, like Catherine said. So credit for that as well.
You bring up Bridgerton, and I keep on hearing the back of napkin math for this show. But the one I never hear, the one I thought was more apropos, like, oh yeah, okay, of course, Bridgerton on one side for the historical / ahistoricalness of it. But on the other side, I thought it was more like the fall of the House of Usher. Mm. Like, I thought there was more of that sort of stuff going on at times for this show, where it was not as harrowing as that show, but it got dark like that show did, or it wanted to go that. So I feel like those polls also probably are pulling the show into this pacing issue that we're all experiencing.
I really like thinking about somebody listening to this having not seen the show and been like, Bridgerton, Fall of the House of Usher? Yeah. But all I can say is like,
And Dickinson and Our Flag Means Death. And like,
And Monty Python. Yeah. We'll sprinkle over the top.
The opening where the peasant lady is absolutely smashed to bits as she's getting boots from the corpse that's about to just slosh into the river, and then that's how we meet 100%. The lead character. She's like, ah, shit, I wanted those boots, you know, like that kind of stuff was the part that I really engaged in. There's not a likable character in the bunch. That's another reason why I kind of like this show, is that they're all assholes in slightly different ways, and they're all they're all lessons that you are supposed to learn, I'm sure, in the source material. Sasha Mamet is fantastic here. I really loved how shrill and screamy she is at every opportunity. I'm putting her now up. I had no idea, but she's up in our great TV yellers, like your Bob Odenkirks and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, she was fantastic. I really liked her, and I hated, absolutely hated, and then it turned around to, I love this character of Tindaro. This guy, he is like an unworldly, spoiled child who is lost in... If he was written today, if this story was imported today, he would be a video game nerd. And he would tell you all about his favorite video games, except he's a Roman military nerd in this story. But he has all that sort of like slightly incel-y properties.
Yeah.
But
at one point he says, I'm very well read in combat. Which is a quite economic line for his deal. Yeah, and
he fucks everything up. Anyways, the characters did grow on me as the show went on, which I wasn't really expecting, because they all seem to be in a silo. You know, like, this one is the fraud, you know, this one is the greedy one, and they never really get out of those silos. And I kind of love that part of it. Like, it was really like, these are all kind of shit people, and let's watch the world in which these shit people operate and the world crumbling around them. That part of it I was here for, and I know most people don't really like that kind of stuff, but I like a mean-spirited show.
Yeah, I do too. It might just be that I was expecting something that the show was never going to be, because the marketing, and especially the poster, like when you go to Netflix and you see the big shot of Tanya Reynolds, who plays Lachiska, like very broadly mugging, you're like, okay, this is a sitcom. And that definitely seems to be how Sasha Mamet as Pompanea and Tony Hale as Sarisco definitely seem like they are acting like they're in a sitcom and are being directed that way. And then the rest are sort of like at various points. I just wanted it to be funnier, I guess. I feel like Our Flag Means Death was the most successful version of this sort of a thing since Dickinson. And then every other one that's come since, like the Noel Fielding show that was on Apple TV Plus earlier this year, the Dick Turpin Made Up Adventures, the Highwayman show that's like Our Flag Means Highwayman, basically. It was like all of these are lesser versions of that for me.
Yeah, I was talking with my coworker Roxana Haddadi about it, and she was pointing out that the closest comp for her was Miracle Workers, which is not a show that a lot of people, it certainly was not a big influential show. And so I felt comfortable still saying, like, there's really no other show that's like this to Cameron. But I think she's right that there is something about the tone that for me is trying to hit a place that both Our Flag Means Death and then, you know, the other kind of lesser versions are playing in that space. But when they make those moves toward sincerity or toward seriousness, they are often in the direction of like humanistic good feeling, or like, actually, we really do love each other. That's kind of how, or like, feelings are important. And when the Decameron makes that shift towards gravity, it's like, we all die. And so there is a very different project that it has as far as its relationship to humor. Mm-hmm. It's very like Albert Camus sense of like, life is meaningless, except we all gotta be here for a while.
And like the nihilism of humor that is born of plague times, and mm-hmm. then the like changing of media at those hinge points. I mean, I too, in my quest to turn into my own grandfather, apparently, also listened to a lot of history podcasts and audiobooks about medieval times, the actual era, not the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's definitely stuff that's way above my pay grade in terms of like how well this document reflects what a like the original's plague era extremely pitch black humor would have been trying to do. But also, like, you know, you read the Wife of Bath section of Canterbury Tales and you're like, this was funny. Like, but Falstaff, sometimes you're just like, what are we doing here? Like, there is a humor that I think they're not accessing properly, or they just can't, they're not plugging into it. So thus my comment that it was like, just go full Zucker mm-hmm. and just make it completely like, you know, break free of the restraints of time and accuracy and just make dumb jokes about boils. Like, you know, we're already here.
I think it probably needed to swing even farther is what I'm realizing. Like, because it gets those moments about like deep existential angst pretty well, particularly toward the back half of the season when, again, spoiler, like some of these people don't make it. And it's always, I think, effectively surprising when you're like, oh, I really liked that guy and he's just gone now and we're just mm-hmm. all gonna keep walking, I guess. Mm. And I think that part of it really invests a lot in, but I think you may be right then that it doesn't quite go goofy enough on the humor side of it for you to sort of feel the full swing of it.
Yeah.
Except again in the performances, because mm-hmm. some of them are so completely unhinged. That,
yeah. It's true.
There will be an excellent doctoral thesis for one or probably several people in like tracking how TV show creators have metabolized COVID, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, not in the sense of getting, although I'm sure they all did, but mm-hmm. in the sense of how, like, you know, in 2020, there was a spate of shows that were like, this is our pandemic show. We made it in 3 days. Like, watch it. Netflix had one, also from Jenji Cohen, and NBC mm-hmm. had one, and there were just a bunch. And then there's the other level of them, which is like, that happened to be in development and came out in COVID and had a totally different tone for that, like Why the Last Man and mm-hmm. Station 11 and mm-hmm. The Last of Us. And, you know, now we're at this point where it's like, it's okay to make jokes about it. Like Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, God knows it got a lot of things wrong. But fundamentally, it is about a mole woman, like getting released from a horrible abduction situation, and yet it manages to be like really dark and really, really funny and weird in the ways that you would think a person like that might be funny and weird. And like, that's just, I guess, what I wanted more from of this mm-hmm. show, you know?
It would have been better if they could have delivered that for you for sure, but I still enjoyed the ride.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you all had a good time with it.
It is time to go around the dial. Our first stop is with Tara. Tara, what have you been watching recently?
So the unkillable corpse of Futurama is back for its second new season on Hulu. It's 12th overall. I've watched screeners for the first 6 episodes of 10 of this season. I would say broadly, they fall into 3 categories. The first, sentimental / dull, like the episodes where we learn all about Fry's brother, Yancey, who always copied him. This is in the old run. Or the episode where Leela came from, or controversially, the one about Fry's dog, Seymour. Here, it's about a game night that Fry's parents threw for his birthday that weird aliens are recreating for him in the present day. Number 2, topical episodes about current events and or social issues like NFTs, fast fashion, animal abuse. Yes, really, in both those cases. And 3rd, other, which is the episode where an extremely forgettable temp gets abandoned by the crew on a planet set aside for dumping ruined books. And learns hypnotism to get back at them, sort of. So there are very occasional glimmers of what made the show fun for its first 5 canonical seasons. I'll even throw the first movie in the mix. I haven't seen it in years, but I remember liking it at the time. But considering how many of the original show writers have come back for the various iterations of the show on various platforms, including this one, it feels more ponderous. And I think it's because they feel like they need to comment on how much worse our collective view of the future is than it was in 1999 when the show first premiered. In our house, there's a bad self-important writing and one or the other of us will yell back at the TV, "You've given me a lot to think about." And I think that's sort of what Futurama is aiming for, unfortunately. I feel the same about it as I did about the latest season of The Bear. Not everything needs to be important. Some things can just be fun. A lot more
things should just be fun.
Yes, God.
So, Dave, you were present in the room while I watched these episodes.
Yes.
Did you have anything more to add?
Can I tell you how many times I laughed at the four episodes that we watched?
We watched
zero.
Six.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, it was definitely not the same show as it was when it
started. Which is bizarre because it's the same writers.
Not that it was ever on the cutting edge of things, right? And I think it's the worst when it is. Like, that's South Park's thing. Like,
yes.
If you wanted NFT episode, I'm sure South Park has done one.
No
back
doubt.
When people were selling, you know, smoking apes or whatever it was for $1 million.
Yeah.
The next week, South Park had their episode. Not 4 years later.
Right. One of my crack colleagues brought that up today in our meeting. He was like, "This, no one cares about NFTs anymore, A, and B, they spend half the episode just explaining what it is." And it's like, we're all over it. Like, that's yesterday's news.
If your type of show is the show that has that long of a production cycle, then choose your topics more carefully because there's more than one of those type of episodes this season, right? There was a Bitcoin one.
That was last season, but the first season's of Futurama, like they did things like a spoof of Titanic or a spoof of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And it's like, that's fine. you can do a future-y take on those kinds of things too without making it seem like you're trying to make a fucking point.
Also, although I can't drum up an example right now because it's sort of mostly fallen out of my brain, but they're doing a lot of like, remember this from the early seasons?
Yeah.
And that was like, okay, well, if you're already at that point where you're just trying to tell an echo of a joke, you might want to scrap that and just like restart your writer's room because a lot of that was pretty weak, unfortunately, because it was a really funny show when it started.
It was so good.
And I then they just kept on going and going. And I don't know why people are still watching because it's not the same show.
Yeah, no, it's not. So for more of this, but written down, you can read my review at Cracked, which I linked in the show notes. I also related to our historical comedy discussion up top. I reviewed the new Apple TV Plus Time Bandits, and you can find my link to that as well. Spoiler alert, I didn't like that either.
They're trying to steal your time.
Yeah.
All right, Catherine, what do you got for us?
I sometimes get asked to moderate things. I got a request from a publicist to moderate for a show that at the time I had not heard of. It was like doing a premiere someplace. And she was like, "I just think you're the right person for this show." And I was like, "That's a stretch. Like, I've never heard, like, thank you. I'm flattered, but I don't know what this thing is." And so I wasn't quite sure exactly why I was the person she was like, "I just think you are really the person I was like, okay. So I start watching My Lady Jane on Prime. And this was before it came out. There was none of the like buzz yet about what this thing actually was. And if you haven't watched My Lady Jane, I'm about to tell you what the premise is. So if people who find premises to be spoilers, watch out. I was like, okay, it's a little bit of high concept at the beginning because it is about Lady Jane Grey, who is this sort of known Tudor figure, but definitely not a Henry VIII, Anne Boleyn level, you know, blockbuster. But her deal is that she's queen for like 9 days and then she gets deposed and then later beheaded. And so she has this very interesting tragic reign. And the premise of this show, in a very sort of CW YA, but like adulted up sexy wise vibe, is like, what if instead of that, she lived out fun feminist romps? And I was like, all right, like I can see why a publicist might be like, oh, you know what, Catherine could be good for this. Then I got 10 minutes in to the first episode. And you know what else there are? Shapeshifters. There are fucking Tudor anamorph shapeshifters. And I was like, actually, yes, this is incredible. This is the best thing I've ever seen. It is so, so goofy in a way that I went through so many cycles of feelings about it. I'm now going to spoil what happens at the end of episode one and into episode two. So this one's slightly more of an actual spoiler, but I think you'll survive. At the end of episode one, as the real Lady Jane Grey does, she gets put in a marriage of convenience to Edward Guilfoyle. Okay, I think that's his name. He's hot. They hate each other. Everyone knows where this is going. Episode two, he's secretly also a horse. And I was like, this is, I'm just inject it straight into my desperate summer body.
Sugar people, are you listening? This is where you put your big secrets.
Thank
Let
you.
Us know in episode one and two, not at the last moment.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Exactly. So Anna Chancellor plays her mom. We love Anna Chancellor.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Rob Brydon is really great in it as a like half evil advisor guy. King Edward, who dies tragically in the historical record and has a slightly more bumpy relationship with life and death in this particular one, is actually gay. Also, so he spends his whole time being like, what if I fucked men? And everyone's like, cool. She's trying to fuck her husband, but sometimes he's a horse, and that also creates awkward problems. Mm. And it's just all of the sort of Tudor court politics stuff, Catholics and Protestants, but the shapeshifters are a marginalized group of people who the Catholics have been trying to like repress for centuries.
Of course.
And they get burned at the stake or like drowned. It's like a witchy thing, like to prove you're not one, they try to drown you, all that kind of stuff. I cannot even tell you what a balm it can be to your summer viewing needs. I do not recommend watching it if you have an itchiness regarding shapeshifters or just like this, like some people really need a TV show to be like, here's my serious deal. And even a Decameron, which is doing a bunch of other stuff, like there is a serious deal core at the heart of that show, whether or not you sort of access it or not.
Yeah,
that's not what this is.
Okay.
The opening shot is from the point of view of a vagina.
Sure.
And I just think it's actually what everyone needs in this moment.
Great.
I mean, this is a great sales job. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, same.
Putting the V in POV.
That's right.
Yes. Also, all of the animals, they used real animals for all of them, except for there's, just as a tidbit I learned at this panel I did, except for the bear, they had to do a bear. And because they needed a scene where somebody's scary in a pub, and they tried it with a real fox first, and they were like, it's not scary enough, we need a bear. If you try to get a bear in your show, but you don't want a real bear, there is one guy, a bear specialist, who you hire. And he puts the mocap suit on and he comes with his own claws. And he comes in and he acts out the bear and then you just CGI on top of him.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I just, yeah.
News you can use, folks.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to check it out.
All right. What do you got to plug for the people listening, Catherine?
I write at Vulture. You can find me there. I'm on various social media platforms sometimes when I unfortunately have not kicked myself off again. That's about it. Right. Yeah.
Check the show notes for the links to all that. Mm-hmm. Sarah D. Bunting.
You may have heard Shogun. It's a really good show. Mm. It took me and Dan a while to finish it, mostly because we did not want to leave the world that it built so beautifully. But man, what a pleasure. What a pleasure to look at. What an admirable willingness to kill off excellent characters and just be like, this is life. Yeah. But here's another, the Anjin says this, mistranslation joke. What fantastic acting, perfectly paced. It had a sense of humor about itself and its characters, but also took them seriously. And it did have that balance, I think, of, you know, when to be serious, but not a nihilist. I was not bored for one second. I am both thrilled and profoundly skeptical about the announcement that we can expect another two seasons. Like, I can't imagine that they would live up to this first one, and I would just be bracing for like fan service flashbacks and other narratively unnecessary nonsense the entire time. But if that wasn't just a ploy so that FX could submit this in the drama category instead of limited series, I will absolutely still watch it. My arms will be folded, skeptically, but I will still do it. It is really not easy to build a world the viewer loves spending time in, but also is content to leave behind because it wants for nothing. I hope it does win everything and that if that was a ploy, that it works. Amen. Shogun. It's a good show. Over at bestevidence.fyi, our esteemed colleague Susan Howard is writing up all the 1994 Edgar Award nominees for Best Fact Crime. Later this week, Eve and I will be talking about true crime properties with an Olympics theme on our podcast, The Docket. You can find all of that and reams more true crime review content at bestevidence.fyi.
I was just imagining a chalk circle with a big hole where the head is, and that's where the shot put got him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, here's what's coming up on our various podcasts. On Friday on Extra Extra Hot Grade, our supplemental podcast for club members, we're going to be talking about the new, as in entering season 4, Unsolved Mystery. And that is available to all club members. Go to extrahotgrate.com/club to sign up and enjoy that and dozens, if not hundreds, of full episodes of those Friday shows. And then come back here next week on EHG Prime for our fall TV preview. And we welcome back Alex Collins and Daniel McKechern for that. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon, presenting this week, and I'm going to make a bold prediction, the actual submission is going to be longer than the episode we're talking about.
Yeah, that is correct.
Catherine, tell us what we're doing.
For your consideration, for your humble consideration, I bring before you the Bluey episode, Camping. And I wanted to bring this before you for a number of reasons. One, I know that you already have one Bluey episode, Fruit Bat, in the canon. I like Fruit Bat very much. I happen to believe there are at least 7 Bluey episodes that frankly deserve canon level, at least consideration, if not full award. And so I was like, who if not I should show up and do this important work for all of us? So then I was trying to think about what other episodes are sort of most important and that I think represent parts of this show that maybe Fruit Bat was not fully getting to. So just in case anyone has been living under a rock or has not walked through the toy aisle of any Target in the last 2 years, Bluey is an animated Australian children's show about a family of cartoon dogs. Bluey and her younger sister, Bingo, are the two kids. The dad's name is Bandit. The mom's name is Chili. And it has these very, very short, roughly 7-minute episodes. There are about 50 episodes per season. There are 3 seasons. This show sort of has gone from little-known Australian gem to astonishing worldwide dominance in the last 5 years. I can't think of another show that like has had the arc that this one has, particularly in the children's space, but like of any show, really, the kind of grip that it has on culture. As I've been trying to think about why that is, Camping for me is either number 1 or number 2 of sort of my very favorite Bluey episodes. I will say there is a bunch of other context for this show, kinds of other episodes that I am not going to be able to get to with Camping. Like, you have not seen between this and Fruit Bat, you have not seen much of Bingo, who is many people's favorite part of this show. So when I come back, we're going to do a Bingo episode. I have not seen episodes that are like outside of the family. Many of these little 7-minute episodes take place in their school, or they take place sort of with other friend groups that they're playing with. So what there is actually this much larger kind of community space around these characters. You haven't seen many. There's some full stylistic departure episodes, like a wordless one. Fruit Bat does this a little bit, but like a full dream space one. And you also haven't seen some of the more balls out goofy episodes, which also happens. But for me, Camping represents the thing that Bluey does that like no other children's show has really ever gotten to, is part of why it is so beloved by adults, particularly adults who are parents, although I know lots of adults who do not have kids who also watch lots and lots of Bluey for the things that it does to them emotionally. And Camping is like that. So first I'm going to set up the general premise of this episode is that Bluey and her family are camping. They are camping in a sort of campground, RV park type place. their cousins and their cousin's family are also there, Muffin and Socks. You also haven't seen much of Muffin and Socks. They are highly controversial characters within the Bluey sphere that we do not have time to fully get into at this point.
Are they shapeshifters?
Not yet. Okay. But in the like very beginning, you have these kind of typical cousin interactions. One cousin's being annoying, somebody else they're fighting. And so Bluey goes running out of the RV, and then we get the kind of setup for what this episode actually is, so we can hear clip number one.
Can you believe it? The butler kicked us out. Oh, we'll have to live in the forest.
Not this one. She hasn't had a bath in 3 days.
I like stinking. Goodbye, sweet stinky cookie.
Bonjour.
Hi.
Tu veux jouer avec moi?
Huh?
Est-ce qu'on joue ensemble?
I'm not really sure what you're talking about.
Oh, thanks. These are for my house. My butler kicked me out.
Oh, une maison, c'est super. On peut prendre les plans pour faire les murs.
Oh yeah, those will be the walls.
So what we hear here is the setup of most Bluey episodes have some kind of game that the kids invent or is handed to them. And in this case, Bluey has run out of the RV and decides to build her own house because the butler kicked her out of hers, and meets this other kid who she has never seen before, who's also camping in this campground, and who she can't understand. He only speaks French. He can't understand her. She only speaks English. And yet they manage to find a way to play with each other. She is sort of holding up a stick and gesturing that she's going to build this house. This other kid is happy to play along. You hear them start to interact with each other. This is kind of the engine of this episode. And you also hear the beginning of one of Bluey's incredible superpowers, which is the music, which is by a guy named Geoff Bush, who is some kind of freaky nightmare genius because he does these things to music that just get you in places that you're like, how? Anyway, okay, so as they are playing this game, we then get to sort of what then becomes the cycle that we're going to go through several times over the course of this episode. So that's clip number two.
Now we need food to eat.
On pourrait planter ces graines pour faire pousser des fruits.
Hey, yeah, we can plant the seed, like farmers. This will grow into a big tree with fruit on it.
Ça va prendre beaucoup de temps pour grandir.
There. Might take a while. We need something to eat now. It's a wild pig.
Sanglier.
Jean-Luc, c'est le dîner.
I'll see you tomorrow.
À demain.
Oh, my name's Bluey.
Salut, Bluey. Moi, c'est Jean-Luc.
See you tomorrow, Jean-Luc.
So we hear then the basically some of the only parent interaction in the game of this episode, which is that they've decided they need something to eat. They find a little seed. They're like, we're going to plant seeds. We're going to make this whole little civilization and be a farm. Bluey's dad, Bandit, comes wandering in to get water out of the stream. He's got a bucket. And then she screams and says, oh, it's a wild pig. In a classic Bandit move, he just accepts that this is his role now, starts making pig sounds. They chase him. He becomes sort of the antagonist of this game. And then we have this evening, like, they recognize, like, I'm going to go back. It's my dinner time. They manage to understand each other's names. And then this becomes the game that we play. We go through three different nights of them interacting. They are in the next day. They wake up. They continue exactly as they have been. They try to catch the wild pig again, but they can't manage to communicate with each other about how to actually do that because, again, they don't speak the same language. So then they wake up for a third day, and then we have the next clip, which is clip number four.
Wild pig.
Sanglier.
Me?
Toi.
You. Yeah, you get him from behind.
Yeah!
à demain matin. Au revoir, Bluey.
So what happens here is we've reached the end of this game. It's the last, it's this day, end of this day. They have finally managed to actually communicate with each other by dipping their fingers in some water and then using one rock to sort of paint on another. It is this breakthrough in their ability to have this game. And then Bluey says, I'll see you tomorrow. She is so excited. And what Jean-Luc is saying to her is actually, no, I'm leaving. We're leaving the next day. She cannot understand. For me, this is one of the incredible things about this episode, because as an adult watching it, you immediately know that that's what this means. And kids who are watching it have no idea necessarily that that's what's being communicated. So you get this like gut stab thing that happens to you before your kid feels that same gut stab thing. They're not left behind. They will be read into it. But you can feel it's shifting into this mode where it is operating. We were both in the same place, my kid and I, watching this. And then you can kind of feel the divide start to happen. Bluey wakes up the next day, realizes that Jean-Luc is gone, is so sad, has had no way to say goodbye to him. Her mother sort of talks to her about like how unfortunately, you know, she saw them packing up. She's bereft. There's just this beautiful thing happened and then it's gone. And then we sort of deal with how we process these things that come into our life and then leave. So we have clip number 5.
Mom, I need a wee.
Okay, let's do a bush wee. Where's the bunny nightlight?
Here it is.
Do you need a wee too, Bluey?
No, but can I come anyway?
The more the merrier.
Mom?
Yeah?
Why does Jean-Luc have to go?
Their holiday was over, honey.
But I want to keep playing with him. He was my friend.
Well, look, sometimes special people come into our lives, stay for a bit, and then they have to go.
But that's sad.
It is. But the bit where they were here was happy, wasn't it?
Yeah. We caught a wild pig together.
Maybe that makes it all worth it.
Will I ever see him again?
Well, you never know. The world's a magical place.
Whoa. Finished.
Ooh, stars. Pretty.
So I love so much about this little section. One of them is that Bandit really has no role in this episode, but I like that when they wake him up in the middle of the night, he just makes another wild pig yes. sound. Like that's just his default mode. I also love the phrase bushwee, a phrase we use in my family all the time now, because sometimes that's what you got to get done.
Sure.
And then, you know, as an adult watching this, this is also what you expect and yet are sort of crushed by the message that you're being presented with, which is, we don't know, like we are going to be left with this ambiguous moment. It's absolutely true. Sometimes these things come into your life and then they leave. The moment that you can't see if you have not seen this episode is that they turn off the flashlight and they can see this beautiful starscape above them. This show is so good. It loves nature. There are lots of episodes where you just get these beautiful little vignette images of insects or wildlife or rocks and streams. And that have the colors of this episode feel like bright childhood colors, but without having a kind of sickly primary crayon box approach to them, which I find so beguiling. And the nature and the sense of how time moves in this episode, again, it's 7 minutes long. We've been through several days with this repeating pattern, the incredible economy of how they are able to pack this much thematically into this thing. And so then I, as an adult, assume that this is going to be the end. We've reached our message. We hear the little note. It is a surprisingly complex one for a children's show. And then you get this little coda, which is clip 6.
Bluey, that book's mine.
I know it's yours, Muffin. I'm just borrowing it.
Hello, Bluey.
So the seed that they've planted as a part of this game that Bluey's playing with Jean-Luc, we grow to it, it has sprouted, and then you watch it grow into a full-sized tree. It happens very quickly, it's a little montage, and so you understand that years are passing, and you see what seems like a teenage Bluey walk out. Muffin is still obnoxious and saying something about a book, and Bluey has walked out to this creek, and there on the other side is a teenage Jean-Luc, who says, "Hello, Bluey," which means he now speaks enough English for them to be able to communicate with each other. You don't get any more, you don't get any sense of like, and then they got married or like, and then this wasn't even, right? It is not trying to make too much, but it is just enough fairy tale, which is also just enough how life does sometimes happen. You do very occasionally get these little miraculous things. And for me, this is one of the most adult episodes of the show because you are so much more able to appreciate the unlikeliness of that thing at the end than you are as a child. And you are so able to access the experience of time just flying in the moment when that tree grows. But that does not change how you watch it. Like, so often things work on this adult level and then kids are sort of left behind. And that is not the case. Kids are absolutely as much into this episode. They love the pig and the game of it. They understand the language barrier thing, even though it is communicated very simply. No one says, like, "I don't understand you. I don't understand you either." Like, all of that has been cut. It is just the most economical. I mean, this episode, it's very hard to watch without, like, and talk about without just being like, "Oh my God." But, but I just find it is so, so representative of the magic of this show and why it has meant so much to me and to my family, but also, I think, just to so many people around the world. And so, like, this is my argument to you about its canon worthiness.
Thank you so much. Sarah, why don't you start us off?
I loved this episode. I very much loved the show. I haven't watched back, but occasionally I dip into it. And I'm always struck by, you know, my nibblings are sort of like aged out of this, but who in that household does not want to watch or talk about Bluey? I can report no one. Just saw them the other day. Everyone's well-versed. And there's something about the proportions of the world being a magical place, especially for children who are receiving parts of it for the first time, good magic and dark magic, and the sort of, not frumpy, but like just the, you know, practicalities of life, not everything feeling good. I appreciated, and I think I said as much when we were talking about Fruit Bat, that I appreciated that it was realistic, but not too sour about the experience of having siblings. No matter what your lane was in the sibling order, you will feel seen. And just like the way that Muffin is generally is like, who has not related to this experience of living adjacent to a toddler and being at the mercies of that black magic? So I love the balance of it. I love that it is like sweet, but not saccharine. It's cute, but not cutesy. It's not trying to be great art. It's trying to give you these little vignettes in 7 to 9 minutes. And it's extremely successful in doing that. And it's fun to think about why. And especially if you have kids, if you have nibblings, if you had a much younger sibling, the amount of children's programming that you have suffered through that was just so like ham-fisted, just like chewed on play school plastic come to life that you're like, you know, this was here all along. And this is eminently possible to program things for children without talking down to them in that slightly too loud nursery school teacher voice. So the world really is a magical place. And I'm glad that it contains Bluey. This was delightful. I wept at the end of it because I'm a, you know, well-adjusted person who has definitely not been through it the last decade or anything. And just that moment, like they're having this talk about like how it is sad, but also you want to be grateful and like may Jean-Luc's memory, even though he's not dead, live in your heart and all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah,
but like
yeah.
The younger sibling is fucking taking a piss.
Yeah.
And then there's the bunny nightlight. And it's just like, that's, I mean,
Ain't That Life? Yeah, wonderful presentation. I was delighted to watch this. I forgive you for making me cry at work. Tara, Sorry. What did you think?
Oh, I also cried, just for the record. I can't obviously speak to how it reads with a child. I certainly trust Catherine of what her experience was watching this with a child or children, and how just the layers that unfold without you really noticing, because there were layers that unfolded without me even really noticing either until you get to that coda. And it's like, damn it, just weeping. She's so much older. She's reading a chapter book. It's a Penguin classic. Like, just all of the elements. And like you mentioned, the nightlight, that's part of it, too. It's that there's just enough real world things in this story to make you hook into it in ways that are familiar, even though this is a family of dogs and you're not a family of dogs, you know. But they are more human than many human characters I've seen on children's programming, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything that you said, Catherine, is so right. The economy of how they deliver, just like these kids bumping into each other by complete chance and just being able to, like, straight out the gate, like, we know what we're doing now, we're playing, it doesn't matter if we can speak the same language, we are on the same page. And we'll continue to be on the same page until fate pulls us apart. So sad, but so sweet. Oh. It's lovely. I can't imagine what it's like for parents to have to go through moments like this. And just, you know, there's a version of this where you can imagine there's another scene that we, you know, where Chili sees them packing up and then runs over to say, no, wait, Bluey has to say goodbye. But that doesn't happen because she doesn't know these people. You know, there were other ways this would have been worse. And instead, it's completely perfect in every respect from top to bottom. Dave.
I kept it together until this morning when I had to cut the clips. And I think I have some, you know, I'm going to say not misguided, but just some unresolved guilt over one of our dogs that passed earlier in the year. We got, you know, it's never a replacement, but we got another dog pretty soon after because the dog that was left behind was really coming out of his shell with a play partner. And so our new dog, Sandy, is great for him. They play all the time, but we got our new dog sooner than we would have otherwise. You know, if Nolan probably wasn't a factor and he just wants to play and that's how he, you know, becomes a better dog, basically. And there was something about Jean-Luc that reminded me of Murray, the dog that passed. And this morning just killed me. I was in my office for a while.
Ça va, Murray?
But so for me, it's like the economy of the story is everything. Like, it really felt like a modern Aesop's fable or something like that, you know, where it's just like, you get it. You know, whether you're 6 or 60 or 600, the message is there and you'll understand it. And, but just the emotional baggage on top of that really just floored me. And I'm kind of losing it right now. So,
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Bluey. Cheeky pig.
One of the episodes that really, really messes me up is Sleepy Time, which is a mommy issues one. Not in a bad way, but just in a, like, the need for independence. And like, letting your kids go, but they still love you, and that you love them, but they need to be, all that kind of stuff. They play that shit at the dentist's office. And then you're just sitting there in the dentist's waiting room being like, are we all okay with this? We're all just going to let this happen?
That is a felony.
We all know what this, we all are here in the pediatric dentist's office.
Every single
one of us knows what this is.
I've called
really.
The police.
That's what the Food Network and HGTV are for.
Seriously?
Waiting rooms.
God.
Yes. Come on. So, like, we all, and then but the other thing about Bluey is, like, I know that for the moms who had, like, infertility issues, there's an episode for that. For the parents who, like, were really, there were milestones that their kids weren't hitting, and then they had to think through their own, there's an episode for that. Like, Bluey will come for you where you live and when you are least expecting. So there is, it is just, yeah, it's, there's nothing, I mean, it's just.
I haven't
just,
cried like that since the end of Iron Giant, Catherine.
I'm sorry.
Oh, fucking goddamn it, Dave.
All right.
Oh, no.
But yeah, it really was a masterclass in doing a lot with a very short amount of time. And there's scores of other shows, whether they're for children or not, that try to do the same thing in an hour or 2 hours that never come close. So.
Yeah, they can't. Yeah.
Nope. Nope.
So, all right, let's put this to the official vote. I think I know how we're going. Sarah D. Bunting, what say you?
Yes, Cheeky Pigs, definitely.
And Tara Ariano.
Nah, just kidding, of course. Yes.
Yeah, me too. So that means... Bluey, Season 1, Episode 43, Camping. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Great Canon.
I like stinking.
American bubble. Yeah. And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for the winner and loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do, and it is sort of campy. General Hospital is getting Emma Sams back to play Holly. Rick Hurst is also returning to play Rick Lansing on General Hospital. That was way after my time, but we included it because, you know, General Hospital news. If you follow this link to Variety's update on the Emma Sams casting, and it's like, Emma Sams was previously on the show, and then it just goes into this absolutely beautiful word salad involving Finola Hughes teaming up to blow up someone's underground bunker.
Yeah.
And then somehow she failed to get back together with Robert Scorpio, which, like, what?
How?
Terrible through the looking glass world is this? but we will link that in the show notes so that you can enjoy it too. And if you are a vintage General Hospital watcher of any era, there are fun comebacks in store for you.
And loser of the week, who is it, Tara?
This show is so bizarre. At the other end of what's going on at ABC, Billy Ray Cyrus. So Dancing with the Stars former pro Cheryl Burke has a podcast, and she has decided to use it for violence, and I approve, because she just goes on it and airs people the fuck out, as she should, because I'm sure she has all kinds of insane stories about all of the personalities that pass through that place. But one of them is Billy Ray Cyrus, and in a recent episode, she said on her podcast that there was a time when he, as she puts it, donkey kicked a stage manager, because they have these long dress rehearsals. The show is live, of course, and so they have to go into a lot of detailed, like, picky stuff to make sure all the lighting is right and stuff. And she says they're R-rated, like Tom Bergeron would, like, swear. It'd be fun and funny. And people like to goof around, but when it's time to work, you got to work. And a stage manager told Billy Ray Cyrus, like, you need to get on your mark so that I can light you properly. And he kicked this guy. Insane. Billy Ray Cyrus just out here kicking people. So,
wow.
Anyway, that's what Miley's dad was up to a few years ago.
Yikes.
Speaking about your achy, breaky heart, do you know what time it is?
Boot scooting boogie time?
I'm not happy with that one. Skip it. All right, this is the seventh game time of the season. The scores are Tara with 3, Sarah with 2, Value Guess with 1. Today we are playing Catchphrase GPT from Amy Allensbach, who earns herself an extra credit topic of her choosing, plus a free shirt or mug or whatever from the EHG store at throughmethods.com. Amy writes, in this game, well-known catchphrases or quotes from TV shows have been run through a well-known generative AI website that really loves synonyms. Translate these back to the original catchphrase for 2 points and name the show it is from for another 2. You only get 1 guess at the catchphrase and 1 guess at the show, but you can ask for a hint at any point during your solving.
Okay.
I will give you the premiere year and the genre as the clue, after which anything left on the board is worth 1 point. There are 3 rounds doing with the types of scripts and the period that they come from, and 5 questions in each. So there's 45 questions in total. I have a tiebreaker if we need it. It should go pretty fast. These are not super obscure kind of things. I'm hoping you're going to have an easy time with it because there are 45 questions. Okay. One note, if the original catchphrase or quote includes a name, that name will be replaced with my name, David T. Cole. So if you hear that, you know I made a replacement. No shows are repeated in the game. We're not going to do steel mills. We're not going to do Challenger Zone equalizing stuff today because we do have a lot of questions to get through. Are we ready to play catchphrase GPT? No, because we don't know the order. Picky, let us know.
We will start with Sarah.
All right, let's go Sarah, Tara, Catherine as our order today. Are we ready now? Now, yes. Are we ready to play catchphrase GPT? All right, I'm going to call an audible and flip round one and round two and start you off with more recent shows. So round one is now going to be scripted shows that premiered after 1984. So you can guess what round two is going to be. All right, let's start with Sarah D. Bunting. I will read you the translated catchphrase. You give me two answers. One, the original catchphrase or quote. And two, the show it is from. Answer what you want and then ask for a hint if you need it for what's left on the board. Here we go. Transparent vision, complete souls, invincible. Transparent vision, complete souls, invincible. And you're going to have to do a little AI thinking here because sometimes AI doesn't get it quite right.
Can you read it one more time for me, please?
Transparent vision, complete souls, invincible.
Complete souls.
You can take a crack at anything you want, or you can also ask for a hint and then answer what's left.
I have a guess, but it's one of those guesses where, like, you're looking at the crossword and the one guess will not leave your head and you can't work.
Right.
So I'm going to ask for the hint right now.
This show debuted in 2006, and it is a sports drama.
Oh, okay. I believe this is a Clear Eyes, Full Hearts, Can't Lose from Friday Night Lights.
You are correct. That is worth 2 points total. Nicely done.
Glad I asked, because my answer was Rizong.
Tara.
Yeah.
That's the observation as stated by her.
That's what she said from The Office.
That is correct for 4 points. Yes. Catherine's first one is, you acquired that, comrade. You acquired that, comrade. We gave ChatGPT, I'm assuming, I don't know for sure, some catchphrase, and that's what it spat back.
Is it, you got it, dude, from Full House?
You are correct for 4 points, yes.
Wow, nice.
Back to Sarah D. Bunting. Me generated substantial missteps. Me generated substantial missteps.
I believe this is, I forget exactly what he says, though. I've made a horrible mistake, or I've made a terrible mistake. I know it's Arrested Development, right?
Arrested Development for two. But I can't give you the other one. You were close, but not quite. It is I've made a huge mistake. Huge mistake.
Huge mistake. Yeah. Okay.
Close, but you still got 2 points there. Tara.
Yeah.
Chow down on my bottom garments.
Eat my shorts.
From
The Simpsons.
4 points. Catherine. All people mislead. All people mislead. I will give you a hint. I think this is probably more in the quote tagline category than an actual catchphrase. All people mislead. So got that clue ready.
Yeah, give me the clue.
All right. This is a 2004 medical drama.
Oh, it's not what I was thinking of at all.
All people mislead.
2004 medical drama.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess it's House.
It is House, 1 point.
It is House, yes. But is it like Everybody Lies? Is that what it is?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got the 2 points. Nicely done. Good use of the clue. Mm-hmm. Back to Bunting. Today offers a stunning opportunity to preserve existence.
Today offers a stunning opportunity to preserve existence.
Yes.
I mean, if only they'd made Shawshank into a TV show, but they didn't. Hint, please.
This is a 2004 medical drama, also tagged as a romance.
Well, I think it's Grey's Anatomy then.
No idea what that is.
But I have never watched that except under duress, and I don't know what the tagline be. Get busy living or get busy dying. That's goddamn right, because that's what I wanted it to be, but it ain't.
Today offers a stunning opportunity to preserve existence. It's a beautiful day to save lives.
Oh,
it's the
sure.
anti-Klingon.
Oh,
yes.
Well, good for them.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
Indulge yourself personally.
Treat Yourself from Parks and Recreation.
Yes, 4 points. To Catherine, how's everything with you?
Oh, friends, how you do it?
Yes, 4 points, yes. All right, here we go, Sarah. Gnaw my gleaming alloy rear. Gnaw my gleaming alloy rear.
G-N-A-W.
Yes, correct. Hang on, hang on, hang on, hang
on. Yeah. My gleaming alloy rear?
Yes. I'm going to give you a hint. We talked about it in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that doesn't help me. I'm having the crossword clue problem again. Hint, please.
All right. 1999 science fiction animated sitcom.
Okay. Futurama?
Yep. Nah, my gleaming alloy rear. It's a little outside your frame of reference, though. I know you're not a big
fan. Yeah, I mean, bite my tin ass? I don't know.
Close. So close.
Bite my shiny metal ass is what Bender says.
Oh, right. Sure. Okay.
All right, back to Tara.
Yes.
Zilch bisque for y'all.
No soup for you from Seinfeld.
Yes, 4 points. Catherine has, the honesty is yonder.
Oh, X-Files, the truth is out there.
Yes. All right.
That's what I thought the house one was. I thought it was trust no one.
Sarah, This is everybody's last for this round. This will be a memorable, please hold experience.
This will be a memorable, please hold experience. Yeah.
I read it. I'll put a little punctuation in there for your benefit. This will be a memorable, please hold experience.
That's good.
No, I got nothing. Hint, please.
Okay. 2005 interminable comedy romance.
High concept.
Terrible, terrible ending.
Terrible ending.
I mean, is the show How I Met Your Mother?
It is. All right. Can you get it from This Will Be a Memorable Please Hold Experience?
I can picture him flapping around saying it, and then I can't come up with the, this is going to be epic. I don't remember. Yeah.
Okay, you're on the right track. That's not it. It's going to be legend, wait for it, dairy.
Right. Okay.
All right. Tara.
Maybe give me a show I watched.
I exist while paying attention. I exist while paying attention.
Hint?
This is a 1993 situation comedy, also known as a sitcom. I exist while paying attention.
Nope.
Anybody have any ideas on this one? I'm listening from Frasier. I ought to know.
Oh, God.
And we should have known. We're Frasier.
We really are.
All right, Catherine, let's end round one with this. Imagine this Mediterranean island. Imagine this Mediterranean island. Scripted show after 84.
I need a hint.
All right, 1985 is when the show started. It is a sitcom. Imagine this Mediterranean island.
Oh, no, I got nothing. I don't know what that is.
Oh, Sarah wanted this one.
I really did, Piggy. Mm-hmm. Picture it, Sicily.
Yes, picture Sicily from the Golden Girls was the answer there. And that is round one. Let's get scores.
Okay. Sarah has 7. Catherine has 14. I have 16.
All right, let's get to it. You guys want to do that, but before 84 first, or do you want to go to unscripted shows to mix it up? What do you want? Sarah, you're going first. Pick.
Before 84, please.
Scripted shows that premiered before 1984, Sarah. Your catchphrase, translated, is, which one is fond of you, infant? Which one is fond of you, infant? Scripted shows before 84.
Oh, fuck. It's Kojak?
Kojak for 2 points. The catchphrase.
Who loves you, baby?
Who loves you, baby? Good for two.
Nice.
Total of 4.
I am my own grandfather, just a reminder.
Tara.
Yes.
I appreciate it when a plot synchronizes harmoniously.
I love it when a plan comes together from the A-team.
You are correct. And then I think, yes, all right, this is for Catherine. The monikers have been switched to safeguard the uninvolved.
Oh. The names have been changed to protect the innocent, but I don't know what...
Oh, really? What you know the catchphrase, so not the show. Okay. Do you want the hint?
Yeah, I don't know.
You still can use the hint, so let me give it to you. My job. Okay. It is a 1951 crime drama mystery show.
Oh, is it Dragnet?
It is Dragnet, yes. 3 points total. Nicely done. Back to Sarah. Have a restful night, David T. Cole, male child. Have a restful night, David T. Cole, male child.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, John Boy is correct. From?
From the Waltons.
The Waltons, yes. 4 points. Back to Tara.
Yes.
Survive for a lengthy duration and also flourish.
Live long and prosper. From Star Trek, the original series.
You're correct. Back to Catherine. Novel that person, David T. Cole. Novel that person, David T. Cole.
I just got it. That's so dumb.
I don't like saying my name out loud. It's weird.
You can say my name instead.
Nope. Novel that person, David T. Cole. Amy set the rules. I can't change the rules if Amy sets them.
That person?
Yeah.
Is it from Batman?
It is not.
Totally would have been my guess.
Take the hint on the second half still if you...
All right, give me the hint.
All right, it's a 1968 tropical crime drama.
It's a good hint.
I added tropical.
Oh. That's nice of you.
I like to give myself a little reward after having to say my own name so much.
68.
Novel that person, David T. Cole.
I don't know it.
Right. Anyway.
Book 'em, Dano.
Oh, sure. Hawaii 5. Sure. Oh, yes.
I was stuck on the other meaning of novel.
You'll never be an AI with that attitude.
Nope.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah. No, no.
Above your own schnoz with a synthetic tube.
You better get this one. We made stickers.
Yeah, I could work with this shit. Up your nose with a rubber hose. From Welcome Back, Kater.
You are correct. 4 point answer. Tara.
Yes.
Observe in the upper atmosphere a winged being, a flying machine.
Look up in the air. It's a bird. It's a plane.
I'll give it to you. That was really close. I think you pretty much got it. Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. I'm going to give it to you. From what?
Listen.
From what?
Superman.
Okay. Good. I know you don't have to, but I did. You know why? I'm a generous man.
Okay.
Catherine. Exit this aircraft. My manager, this jet.
You have to say it again.
Exit this aircraft. My manager, this jet. Exit this aircraft. My manager, this jet.
No, I still need I need a hint. I think I need a hint.
1977 adventure drama mystery fantasy show.
My manager,
Exit this aircraft. My manager, this jet. 1977 adventure drama mystery. All together with the last clue, please. Fantasy show. All right, guess again.
I don't.
She's too young. Yeah.
It wasn't in syndication when she was a kid.
I know, but you still might know it. It's kind of famous. All right. Yeah. The catchphrase from Exit This Craft, My Manager, This Jet is. D-plane, boss. D-plane. That's pretty good translation. D-plane, exit, boss.
From D-plane, Fantasy this Island. Jet.
From Fantasy Island.
Never saw. Okay,
well, that was a heartbreaker.
Episode.
Sarah, failed it by that margin. Failed it by that margin.
All right, missed it by that much? But I don't... Can I have the hint?
Yeah. 1965 action-adventure comedy.
Get Smart?
Yes, that is correct. 3 points. Ooh. Tara.
Yep.
Wow, my nasal appendage.
Ow, my nose, from the Brady Bunch.
Sure. Catherine, what's the topic of conversation, David T. Cole?
What you talking about, Willis?
From?
Is that one's... I always confuse them. Is that Different Strokes?
Yeah, it is. No, Different Strokes.
It is Different Strokes. Yes.
Well,
okay. Yes.
Well, actually, it's Different Strokes. Yeah, it's different there you
strokes.
Go.
Fix that for you.
Nicely done. Everybody's got one question left in this round. This one's to Sarah. Give my cornmeal a smooch. Give my cornmeal a smooch.
Oh, kiss my grits from Alice.
4-point answer. Nicely done. Tara.
Yes.
We should stay cautious beyond the indoors. We should stay cautious beyond the indoors.
Let's be careful out there.
From? Oh, she's got her fingers.
Hill Street Blues.
On her temples.
Nice.
It was also from Cop Rock, but that was not before 1984.
Well, I mean, same thing, really.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Last question of the round for Catherine. I might have escaped unpunished, except from some snooping youngsters.
Oh, it's Scooby-Doo.
Correct.
And it's...
I'm gonna be leaning here because there's...
Because there's like a bunch of different versions of it. And I might have gotten away with it if it hadn't been for you meddling kids.
Correct.
Is generally the gist.
Yep. Perfect. Yeah. 4-point answer. And that is round two. Let's get scores.
Okay. Let's see. Catherine has 25. Sarah has 26. I have 36.
She says confidently.
I'm waiting for Sarah to confirm. Sarah fact checks
Correct.
Me. Okay.
Correct.
I mean,
those are the scores.
Or we have the same wrong math, which, fine.
Either way.
Mm-hmm.
Round three, unscripted shows from any year.
Okay.
The clue will be the year and a key talent involved instead of genre.
Got it.
To Sarah first. Here is your translated catchphrase. Couch that in the configuration of an inquiry.
Couch, really having a rough week.
Really bad.
Okay. Please phrase that in the form of a question. From Jeopardy.
Yes, 4 points. Tara.
Yes.
Kindly assemble your blades next to the exit.
Oh, no. What is the verb? Pack your knives and go?
Yep. Please pack your knives and go. We'll take that. From?
Top Chef.
Top Chef. 4-point answer. Catherine. Census indicates. Census indicates.
Census.
Census. Like taking a.
Like taking a census.
Mm-hmm. Census.
But don't get hung up on that.
Indicates.
No. No.
Got a clue if you need it.
Census indicates.
Oh, Tara.
I can hear it in my head. I can hear the person saying it.
Uh-huh. There have been so many people who have said it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Give me the hint.
Okay. The year this show started is 1976.
Uh-huh.
But the key talent I'm giving you is Steve Harvey.
Oh, it's Family Feud. And it's the sense. It's like the, I can't remember what word he uses.
Oh, no.
It's like.
What if he's drunk?
No, I don't.
Survey says.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. All right. Well, you got Family Feud, so that's good.
Yeah. But...
Back to Sarah. Forming excitement. Forming excitement. It's not AI's best work, but let's see if we can get you to it.
Forming excitement.
Yeah. Non-scripted show.
Forming excitement. Non-scripted show. Forming excitement. I will require the hint.
All right. I think you're going to get it off this hint. 1966, Bob Eubanks. Forming excitement.
Okay. It's Eubanks. Is it Joker's Wild?
Not
the Bob Eubanks you had in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
no idea the catchphrase. Can't guess. That's pretty far
can't
field.
Get there.
Yes. Okay. Anybody? It's the newlywed game. Forming excitement is
making whoopee. Sure.
Yes.
Approach lower.
Oh, come on down. from The Price is Right.
Yes, 4-point answer. Nice. Nicely done. Catherine has, every piece of data you require is available regarding the assignment. Every piece of data you require is available regarding the assignment.
I don't know if she watches the show.
All the information you need is there.
You got a hint available. You can always use that.
Yeah, give me the hint.
Okay. You haven't answered anything yet, so you're on
one. Yeah.
This show started in 2015, and one of the key talents is Greg Davies.
I don't watch the show, but is it Taskmaster or
is
it like,
yep.
But I don't know what
close.
The phrase.
What you said was right, if you can finish
it. All the information you need is
available regarding the assignment.
Is there in the job or something.
You're really close. All the information you need is on
the task.
It's on the task,
okay, but you got Taskmaster, so
one point
for you.
Your kids might like the show. It's goofy.
I have always been like, one day I'm going to get sick, and Taskmaster is going to be there for me.
Yep.
Sarah, counsel's verdict is pronounced.
The tribe has spoken. On Survivor.
Yes, 4 points.
Survivor.
Tara.
Yes.
That appears sizzling. That appears sizzling.
You look hot. I thought that might be from one of the Paris Hilton shows. I have no idea what it is. I'll take a hint, I guess.
2004, Paris Hilton.
Oh,
you didn't get it right, though.
Shit. You look hot.
Am I hot or not?
That's hot.
Okay, but what's the show?
That's hot.
Oh, God. What is that show? It's with the one with Nicole Richie. Oh, my God. I can't remember. I can't remember.
Wow.
The Something Life?
Simple Life.
Yeah. All right. No points for Tara there.
Damn.
To Catherine, I would prefer to invest in a letter that is not a consonant.
Oh, I'd like to buy a vowel from Wheel of Fortune.
You're correct. Sarah, best wishes, journey securely, move along.
Oh.
Best wishes, journey securely, move along.
Journey securely. Good luck, travel safe, go. From The Amazing Race?
Yes, nicely done. 4 points. Pulled it out. Tara.
Yep.
A singular day you're within, the subsequent day you're exterior.
One day you're in, the next day you're out.
From?
Project Runway.
Correct. Back to Catherine.
Oh no. Why do you always laugh before mine?
Generous fortune minus any mishaps. Generous fortune minus any mishaps.
Good luck, don't mess it up from the... No. Oh, shoot.
Do you want to take a stab at
the
show?
It's RuPaul's Drag Race?
Do you want the clue? Nope.
No, it's not? I don't know what it is.
Oh, that's what I thought it was.
Not. Generous fortune minus any mishaps. This is from a show that debuted in 1983.
Oh, was it Press Your Luck?
Press Your Luck. Big money.
No whammy. Big money, no whammies.
Oh, but it's the same as good luck, don't fuck it up. I mean, come on.
That was a tough one.
Sarity Bunting, here's your last of the round and the game. So let's get the scores quickly.
Oh, okay. Catherine has 31. Sarah has 38. I have 48.
Okay. Anybody's game. All right, Sarah Bunting, hand over your outerwear and depart this Manhattan neighborhood. Hand over your outerwear and depart this Manhattan neighborhood.
Hand over your outerwear and depart this Manhattan neighborhood.
Indeed.
Since it doesn't matter, can I have the hint, please?
2005 with Gordon Ramsay.
Okay, I guess it's Hell's Kitchen.
Yep. What's that catchphrase?
The only one I remember is, come on, guys, and then a bunch of bleep noises.
So take off your apron and get out of my kitchen. I don't remember the catchphrase.
Give me your jacket and leave Hell's Kitchen.
Jacket.
Oh, okay.
All right, Tara, here's your last.
Okay.
Would y'all embrace this flower?
Will you accept this rose?
From?
The Bachelor or the Bachelorette.
4 points. All right, Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
Don't trip yourself up. Here's your last question. Should you lack the ability to admire yourself, how in eternal damnation can you extend admiration to another individual?
Yeah. If you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else?
Can I get an amen?
Can I get an amen up in here?
And the show is
RuPaul's Drag Race.
There you go. 4 point answer to end this. Let's get the final regulation scores.
All right. Catherine finished with 35, Sarah 39, me 52.
All right. I'm going to do this one a little differently for our tiebreaker. We always want to use it. We're going to go from give lowest to highest one crack at it. So, Catherine, you get it by yourself. Mm-hmm. You get one guess. If not, we'll move to Sarah.
Oh, boy.
It is a tiebreaker. It is a scripted show. Obstruction is pointless.
Resistance is futile?
Yes, from the show.
Well, it's
that we know as the following.
But it's a Star Trek movie is the problem.
Well, before the movie, it was in.
It was in Next Generation.
There you go.
Okay.
We're going to give you two steel meals for a future value guest for that double correct answer.
Job.
Tara.
Well done, Tara.
Nicely done, everybody.
Me.
Thank you, Amy. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We gathered under one roof to discuss our recent bout of Decameron fever. I don't know what. Before going around the dial, stops at Futurama, My Lady Jane, and Shogun. Catherine proved the real canon are the friends we made along the way. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Tara was a winner of this week's Game Time from Amy. Next up, we're going back to the future with the new Unsolved Mysteries. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Am I displaying enough top of fresh to intrigue?
Sarah D. Bunting.
I, too, like stinking.
And Catherine Von Arendonk.
We'll do a bush wee.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.